True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch, rushing! Deep left field! This is way back! Welcome on!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
You wanted prospects? Well, we got them this weekend. Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Monday, June 20th. Frank Sanford joined by Scott White. Hope you had a great weekend. Here's what we have for you today on the show. A bunch of waiver wire talk, starter sit, worryometer for three starting pitchers in particular, and of course, we will get to those prospects. Happy Father's Day to you, Scotty, and to the rest of the great dads out there. How was bowling with the kiddos on Friday?
It was good. It was good. They did better than I thought they'd do. I did worse than I thought I'd do. I missed my coach, Joe Polito, who was with me the last two times I bowled. He's not actually a bowling coach. He's somebody who works for CBS. But he has coached me how to do the curve roll, you know?
Got you.
Where, you know, you come up right. The ball is approaching the gutter and you think it's going to go in, but no, it hangs a left and ideally strikes the pins close to the center, but wasn't getting it quite right until the very end, until, you know, like the ninth frame of the second game. And my kids were very disappointed at how poorly I was bowling because they're used to me winning everything. And frankly, I was disappointed too. So I'm sure if Joe was there, he would have told me what I was doing wrong and it would have taken me less time than 19 frames to figure it out. But hopefully I will know better for next time and not embarrass myself in front of my children again.
Look, especially if you don't bowl that often, Scott, if you're just trying to pick it back up after years of not playing and you're trying to curve the ball and do all this crazy stuff, it's definitely going to take some time.
It's so fulfilling, though. Like, it's the second game, I didn't want to. I scored like 46 points the first game. That's how bad it was.
Oh, geez.
But I was committed to getting it right, you know? So I was willing to take my lumps because I knew we were going to play a second game. But at some point, I was just like, you know, I can't embarrass myself. I just was bowling straight up, you know, just straight lines, basically, and doing better. But it's just not as satisfying, you know?
Oh,
like,
I know.
It's just not the same. It's like one of those weird things, you know, people make YouTube videos about, like, oddly satisfying things, like bowling in curves as opposed to straight lines is one of those oddly satisfying things that you don't know until you do it, how fulfilling it is.
And I try to do it myself too, Scott, curve the ball. I don't think that I'm doing it correctly, but sometimes it works out okay. And I can, I don't know, bowl like a mid 100s, which is like, okay, it's nothing great, but it is very fulfilling.
That's what I can get to. Yeah. At my best. If I had Joe watching. Joe, I miss you, Joe.
Ah, we miss you, Joe. Anyway, let's get into the prospects. We're going to delay, oh my goodness, a little bit because the prospects are really the biggest story of the weekend. And I saw some people talking in the YouTube chat beforehand. They feel like this could be a season-changing waiver wire weekend. And I don't really disagree based on some of these names that we're going to talk about. So let's start with the biggest one, I would say, the Detroit Tigers. Riley Green made his debut on Saturday. He's 71% rostered. He went 2-for-3 with 2 walks, 2 runs scored in that game. And last year in the minor leagues, he was awesome. 24 home runs, 16 steals, 301 batting average, a 921 OPS. But he was not the only outfield eligible prospect to get called up or recalled. Alex Kirilloff was the other one. He had 2 hits in 2 games this weekend, 53% rostered. Scott, talk to me about Riley Green, Kirilloff, and after that, we'll get to ranking some of these outfielders.
Okay, so those two, we're not going to talk about the other two big call-ups? Or?
We'll get to them.
Okay, all right. Riley Green and Kirilloff. Yes. So I would imagine... Well, I could say for a fact, Green is less available than Kirilloff. However, if you've been following my prospect reports, I've been telling you to stash both of them for a couple weeks. We're going to be starting with a fresh slate in this week's prospects report, basically, because 3 of my 5 on the verge got called up, and CJ Abrams, who is one of the next who I would have put in for them, you know? Mm-hmm. Anyway. Yeah, so Riley Green, he's walked 4 times already, I believe, showing good plate discipline right of the way. I like to see that. He is a, like, just from a straight up, this is what all the prospect rankings say, he's the highest ranked of all these prospects. Pretty much a consensus top 5 guy coming into the season. You may remember he was going to make the opening day roster. It had already been reported, and then he broke his foot. Yeah, I wasn't necessarily on board with this because his strikeout rate was higher at AAA, but most publications had him as a better prospect even than Spencer Torkelson, who was the number one pick in the draft 2 years ago. So really, really good prospect, Riley Green. Stands out most for the hit tool, but has power, has a little bit of speed, hopefully. And as we're seeing, he can get on base. Hopefully that continues. So I think he's the higher upside play of the two, but it's... What may be influencing my thinking there is just that we've seen Kirilloff a fair amount in the majors already, and it's gone mostly poorly. But it's gone poorly because his wrist hasn't been right really since May of last year. And he was doing some pretty impressive things before hurting that wrist, but he tried playing through it. It didn't go well. He eventually had season-ending surgery, came back this year. It still wasn't feeling right. Had a cortisone shot, got sent to AAA to work on his swing. He'd gotten into some bad habits. He was putting the ball on the ground way too much. And his numbers at AAA, it took him a while to get it right, but once he got going, just insane production at AAA. 359 batting average, 10 home runs in 35 games. Got on base at a 465 clip, which is something we hadn't seen from Kirilloff in the majors or minors before. So I'm pretty excited about him too. Mm-hmm. I think if push comes to shove, I'm picking up Green first, but it wouldn't surprise me if Kirilloff actually ends up better. And he's also eligible at first base while Green is just outfield.
Yeah, I do think Riley Green has more upside between the two, especially if you're talking about a categories league. I think we could see some speed out of Riley Green. Hopefully this is like a shot in the arm for the Tigers lineup too, because they've been so bad all season long. And I think his first game on Saturday, they go out and they put up, what was it, like 14 runs or something crazy like that? Yeah, 14 runs. So hopefully this is something that can help rejuvenate the Tigers lineup because it's been very bad. Scott, I'm going to throw Michael Harris in that mix because I got this question earlier on Twitter, and I actually said I would take Michael Harris over Riley Green, and I think it's really close. So how would you rank those three, Green, Kirilloff, Michael Harris?
Here's what I've told people who've asked me on Twitter. If this is just I'm putting upside on my bench in hope of a big score, a big win, then I would rank them Green first. And, oh man, between Harris and Kirilloff, I guess I'd go Harris ahead of Kirilloff. But what changes it is, like, if you already are relying on Harris, who's been good for a couple weeks now, you consider him one of your starting outfielders, then I wouldn't mess with that, because as many prospects as, I mean, Spencer Torkelson said, as many prospects high-end prospects, as we've seen, struggle to break in. I don't know that you need to mess with a good thing. So it's kind of a how deep is your league thing. I imagine, though, if you can give half a thought to dropping Harris, it's probably a pretty shallow league, in which case I'd go for Green.
Yeah, my thinking with Harris versus Green is, look, obviously Green was the higher upside prospect on prospect lists in general, but Harris is performing well already. I know it's a small sample, and the Braves lineup is a lot better than the Detroit Tigers. So that's just something that's factoring into my mind. And I would take Harris over Green, but it is very close.
He has been the ninth place hitter in that lineup. True. For what that's worth. Now, obviously, that he could move up. That could change if he keeps hitting well, but it hasn't changed yet.
All right, let's move over to the shortstops. Other big prospect news from the weekend. O'Neill Cruz will be called up on Monday. He's 64% rostered, obviously, with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Got off to a very rough start in April down in the minors, but since the start of May, he's been much better. He's got 9 homers, 11 steals overall, and then CJ Abrams is apparently being recalled by the San Diego Padres. Sounds like to help address the Manny Machado injury, which we will get to a little bit later on. And Abrams was on fire in the month of June. 371 batting average, 3 homers, 5 steals, 965 OPS. Much more widely available. He's only 33% rostered. So, Scott, how are you breaking these two down? Who would you rather have, CJ Abrams or O'Neill Cruz?
See, I kind of feel like we buried the lead here because O'Neill Cruz, I think was the biggest lightning strike of all of these. You know, he got so much hype in spring training and a lot of people have stashed him away for a very long time, 61% rostered. I mean, people were stashing Green too, but that was more injury related. So you could kind of, you know, you knew you were going to be waiting a while for him, but we didn't know how long we were going to be waiting for Cruz. And as we've talked about recently, he's picked up the pace quite a bit in the minors too. Over his past 25 games, 302 batting average, 7 homers, 962 OPS. I know he wasn't ranked as highly on most prospect lists as Riley Green, but I think of all these players, he's the ceiling guy. You know, he got ranked a little lower because
that's O'Neill Cruz. O'Neill Cruz you're talking about.
Yeah.
Cool.
Got ranked a little lower because of downside risk, because of questions about where he'd wind up defensively. Sounds like he's going to be just the shortstop to start out. He got a little bit of time in left field at AAA. But just in terms of tools, I remember seeing Baseball America published prior to the season the average exit velocity last year for all of their top 100 prospects, and Cruz was in a class of his own. He was like 94 miles per hour. He was basically another 6'7" guy who impacts the ball like Aaron Judge. Is he going to be disciplined enough with his mechanics? Is he going to be disciplined enough with the strike zone to take advantage of that? I can't say. I mean, I could see it going disastrously. That's certainly a plausible scenario, but it's also a plausible scenario that O'Neill Cruz is just a monster and potentially right away. And, you know, he's been a great base dealer in the minors too. Now, a lot of times with sluggers that they discard that skill once they get to the majors. But, you know, there's a good chance he's one of the best power hitters in the game and also is contributing like 15 to 20 steals, or at least that kind of pace. I'm skeptical it'll be in it as a rookie this year, but it could happen. So I think he's the one guy, regardless of your circumstances, Cruz, you have to take a flyer on him.
Mm-hmm. Last year, he had 5 batted ball events. He got called up late in the season. I think it was the final 3 games for the Pirates. And he had a batted ball of 118.2 miles per hour. This is O'Neill Cruz that we're talking about. And yeah, he impacts the ball incredibly, incredibly hard. So I guess if you're just comparing O'Neill Cruz versus Abrams, you're taking Cruz over CJ Abrams, right?
Yes. Yes. The one hesitation I might have is if like steals is the thing you need. But even then, I mean, we saw Abrams in the majors for a while. Didn't seem like he was ready to make an impact. And it's not clear even now with this second promotion that it's to be an everyday player necessarily. So yeah, I would take Cruz. In an ideal world though, CJ Abrams is an elite base dealer.
All right. Would you be okay dropping at the shortstop position JP Crawford, Brandon Crawford, Tyro Estrada for either any of these shortstops?
Yeah.
Okay. Because those are rostered in over 70% of CBS leagues. So.
Yeah, I know. But those are not pretty much. If this is a choice between lots of upside or little upside, I'm going to go lots of upside.
Sure. All right. So O'Neal Cruz and CJ Abrams, two other big names this weekend. Shortstops, of course. Abrams got picked up in a few of my deeper leagues so far. We had some fab run on Sunday night, and he went for $28 out of a $1,000 fab budget in 115 team league, so around 3%, and then $23 out of $1,000 budget in another league. That actually was to me. So yay, I got CJ Abrams. I hope he's awesome, because that would be great.
I'm in 3 15 team roto leagues. I already had him. I've kept him stashed in two of them. I kept him stashed until last week in the other one and foolishly dropped him for a Red Sox reliever who wasn't even Tanner Houck.
Matt Strom?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Maybe. I mean, I picked up Strom and Robles. That could have been either one. It was dumb, though. I regretted it immediately and then regretted it even more when I didn't win him back today.
All right. A few others I wanted to mention. Leover Peguero got called up by the Pirates this weekend, but it seems like it was more out of a desperation. I think they had someone go on the COVID IL and they just needed to replace. It was Tucupita Marcano went on the COVID IL. And then they called up Peguero because apparently he was the closest in terms of like geography in the minor league system. Basically, they needed help. But this is a pretty big prospect as well, Scott. The thing is, I don't know if he's going to stick around.
Yeah, I would suspect not. It seemed like kind of a desperation move. I can't remember what Ben Cherington, the Pirates GM, basically described it as in those terms. Like, we had a need to fill, and he was in a spot to fill it. So I think with Cruz coming up, Peguero probably goes back down.
Yeah, and he's only 21 years old. He got called up from AA. Just a name to watch to see if he gets recalled later on in the season. Does have a lot of speed, also has some pop. Again, the name there, Leover Peguero, and not as highly regarded, but Buddy Kennedy was promoted by the D-backs this weekend. He hit a grand slam on Sunday, his first career home run. And he's kind of an interesting prospect. Last year in the minors, he hit 290, 22 homers, 16 steals. He's 1% rostered on CBS. So in the deepest of leagues, a name to look at there, Buddy Kennedy. Scott, do you have anything on him?
It kind of reminds me the minor league numbers of Brendan Donovan. He's a guy we kind of poo-pooed when he came up, and he's turned into something halfway useful in fantasy. But I don't know that Kennedy, like, I don't know that lightning's going to strike twice in that regard. But similar in that he has good plate discipline, a little bit of power. We'll see.
All right. Well, let's get into, oh my goodness gracious, players from the weekend.
Oh my goodness gracious.
All right, Scott. Who do you got?
I'm going to go with Mackenzie Gore. Mackenzie Gore, who made his second straight start against the Rockies. Both have gone very poorly. This was Friday when he made that second start, and his ERA between those two starts. Okay, so on Friday he allowed 8 earned runs in 4 innings, 9 hits, 3 walks versus 1 strikeout, and that's 2 starts in a row now where he's had, not just against the Rockies, not just bad, but more walks than strikeouts. And that's worrisome because guy couldn't find the zone at all last year. That was part of his problem in the minors, why he lost so much stock as a prospect. Those two starts, so bad, his ERA has gone from 150 to 364. So all those gains in roto leagues basically lost in the span of two starts. That is frustrating. Now, this one was at Coors Field. The other one wasn't. But I will point out that 5 of the 8 runs he gave up Friday, this is Mackenzie Gore, 5 of the 8 runs came on hanging breaking balls to CJ Krohn and Randall Grichuk. Would those have been hangers under normal atmospheric conditions? It's reasonable to think they might not have been. That's the whole thing about Coors. That's not the whole thing about Coors Field, but that's part of why it's such a difficult place to pitch, is breaking balls don't break like you're used to. So independent of that first bad start, I'd be inclined to give him a pass for Coors Field, but this is 2 awful starts against a lineup that theoretically isn't very good and with a high number of walks. So I'm a little worried. I'm a little worried about Mackenzie Gore. Not anywhere close to dropping him or anything, but I might consider sitting him this week.
Yeah, there were a few other things going on in this start. The fastball velocity was down 1.2 miles per hour. A couple other things just happening with him recently. 3+ walks in 4 straight. The swinging strikes have been down in 2 straight starts for Mackenzie Gore. So, yes, we do have a decision to make. He's up against the Diamondbacks this week. They are 24th in weighted on base average against left-handed pitching. What do you think? Do you start Mackenzie Gore against the Diamondbacks?
I would have to, good matchup, obviously, but I'd have to lean no. I'm not saying it's the, under no circumstances would I do it, but I'd lean no.
All right, fair enough. From one pitcher to another, a much older pitcher, someone we've been waiting all season long to get back on track, Uncle Charlie Morton. Finally, his best start of the season at the Cubs. And he went 7 shutout. He gave up 3 hits, 0 walks, 9 strikeouts, 21 swinging strikes on 94 pitches, 12 of those on the curve, 6 on the fastball. He had everything working in the start, 39% CSW overall. That's called strikes plus whiffs. 28% is about league average. So 39% is really, really an awesome mark there. It was his first start with 0 walks this season. And he has 1 walk or fewer in 5 of his last 7 starts. So that was a huge issue for him early on in the season. I mentioned the walks were up. First pitch strikes were not great. So he was falling behind in a lot of counts. And, you know, he couldn't finish any hitters off because the curveball wasn't working. He didn't have the fastballs. It was a mess early on in the season for Charlie Morton. But now 16+ swinging strikes in 3 straight starts. And if you look at his last 8 starts overall, the ERA is over 4. But that comes with a 3.10 xFIP, 11.8 K per 9, 2.5 walks per 9. I kind of feel like we're right there, Scott. And like we're on the verge of now we're going to start to see this come to fruition and actually see it play out in great starts. And that's what we got from Morton this weekend.
Oh, yeah. He's back. He's back. Charlie Morton's back. I kind of had a feeling he was back already. You mentioned the swinging strikes. I have it as 18 or more in 3 straight. I'm not sure why different data feeds come up with different numbers for swinging strikes. That seems like a straightforward count. But anyway, it was a lot. And he just had problems getting through the first inning in each of the previous 2 starts. So gave up a decent number of runs that you know, maybe concealed the progress he was making. But I wrote about it last week. Hopefully you bought low when you could on Charlie Morton.
Yep. Looks like the buy low window has been slammed shut. And it's about time because, Charlie, we needed this. So hopefully.
And why don't you know this was the game? This was the start that ended the Braves' 14 game winning streak.
Right. Yeah. I think they won.
Charlie Morton was awesome. And
yeah. They lost that one late. I think it was a 1-0 loss or 2-1, something like that. So unfortunate.
Yeah, I think so.
Let's stick with some pitchers and take a look at the waiver wire from the weekend. We'll start with this first group. These are names between 59 and 70% rostered. Michael Wacha, another solid start against the Cardinals. 5 1/3 innings pitched, 1 run, 5 strikeouts. The ERA is down to 2.28, and he's going up against the Tigers this week, so a nice matchup there. Taijuan Walker has 19 strikeouts over his last 2 starts. I don't know if I'm buying it. Maybe Scott is. We'll find out. But he's going up. He went up against the Marlins this weekend. 6 2/3, 1 run, had those 9 strikeouts. And his ERA is down to 2.88 at the Marlins again this week for Taijuan Walker. John Gray has now looked very strong in 3 of his last 4 outings. He was at the Tigers this weekend as well. 7 shutout with 6 strikeouts. And in the month of June, 4 starts for John Gray, 2.52 ERA, 31 strikeouts over 25 innings pitched. He is 59% rostered and going up against the Nationals this week. Scott, what do you think of these three? Michael Wacha, Taiwan Walker, and John Gray.
I'd like John Gray more this week if I thought he was actually going against the Nationals. I think because the Rangers have a five-game schedule, they're just going four-man, which would put John Gray going against the Phillies this week.
Not as great.
Yeah, you know, and I've been wrong when I've been wrong before. So maybe he will go against the Nationals. Either way, I think John Gray is the most exciting of this group. You know, we like him a lot as a sleeper. When I say we, basically the entire fantasy analysis industry liked him as a sleeper coming into the year, getting out of Coors Field. He was working on developing a sweepier slider too. I haven't actually seen it, so I don't know if that's the slider he's working with, but it has been getting its share of whiffs. So yeah, pretty excited about the direction John Gray has taken, regardless of who he's facing this week. It wouldn't be a bad idea to pick him up if he's available. I'm not sure what's the only thing I've noticed for Taiwan Walker, who's had good strikeout total last two starts, unusual for him, is that he's been throwing his slider a little more.
Yeah.
But it hasn't been the sort of dramatic arsenal change that would lead to dramatically different results. So I'm pretty skeptical of what Taiwan Walker's been doing too.
I noticed that the slider has been a good pitch for him this season in terms of just recording outs. It has a 188 batting average against. Let's check out that whiff rate. 25.8%. That's okay. Not great. So, all right, we'll see what happens. I would say if I'm ranking them, I would go John Gray, Taiwan Walker, and then Michael Wacha in that order. Scott, would you be okay dropping Graham Ashcraft for any or all of these? He's now given up 10 earned runs on 19 hits over his last two starts.
I'm okay dropping Ashcraft just in a general sense, but I think of these three, the only one I drop him for is John Gray.
Okay. Fair enough. Waiver wire pitchers, part two. I don't really think any of these pitchers are good, but they do have strong matchups this upcoming week. Keegan Thompson had his best start up against the Braves, 6 shutout with 9 strikeouts. Brad Keller.
That was the one opposite Morton.
Yes.
Keegan Thompson.
Yes, indeed.
Get the Braves in.
Brad Keller was at the Oakland A's this weekend, 7 shutout innings with 6 strikeouts. Cole Irvin was on the other side of that start, 6 1/3, 1-run ball, 6 strikeouts there. Johnny Cueto has now allowed 3 earned runs or fewer in 5 of his 6 starts. He went into Houston through 7 shutout innings with 5 strikeouts. Pretty impressive there. And then Dylan Bundy. I know, it's Dylan Bundy. It was an 8-inning, 1-run performance, so I'll just throw it on the rundown, then we can just laugh about it a little bit later on. But he was at the Diamondbacks, 8 innings of 1-run ball, 7 strikeouts. All 5 of these names, Scott, have good matchups this week. Are you interested in any?
Not really, no.
I don't blame
Dylan,
you.
Dylan Bundy has a 5.17 ERA. Cueto's been impressive, but it's a 4.07 xFIP, so that's... It's going to get the rug pulled out from under him soon enough. Keegan Thompson, I did kind of like him until I started him last week. Not the week where he went against the Braves against Morton, but the week before that, he had 2 starts against the Orioles and the Yankees and allowed a combined 10 earned runs in 3 2/3 innings.
Oof.
That's my experience with Keegan Thompson. Not so much what he just did to the Braves. And I've pointed out before, the Braves give pitchers a lot of swinging strikes. So I choose not to be swayed by this performance by Keegan Thompson for a couple reasons.
Fair enough. Yes, the Atlanta Braves have the 3rd highest strikeout rate against right-handed pitching this season. So that would explain Keegan Thompson getting a lot of swinging strikes in this one.
It was by far his best swinging strike effort of the season. Even the other starts that were good, it wasn't so much because he was missing bats.
All right. And he is at the Pirates this week. So pretty good matchup there for Keegan Thompson. Cueto is the other one where, you know, if you really need a streamer, he's going up against the Orioles this week. They're not great against right-handed pitching. And yeah, Cueto's been okay. So those are the two I would probably look at streaming. Waiver wire pitchers, part three. These are for deeper leagues. Is there anything here? The Godfather. He's back. He's pulling you back in. Mitch Keller has now allowed two earned runs or fewer in four straight starts. On Sunday, six innings of two-run ball against the Giants, where he had four strikeouts. And over his last four starts, a 2.44 ERA. Swinging strikes are way down. He's gone with this new sinker, and he's leaned all the way into it. Lots of ground balls, though, for Mitch Keller. He's widely available. Daniel Lynch is the other one. He had a career-high 10 strikeouts at the Oakland A's this weekend with 23 swinging strikes. Scott, anything here in deeper leagues? Mitch Keller, Daniel Lynch.
I think Mitch Keller could be respectable, but I don't think he'll be anything more. And for the Pirates, I'm just not sure. Respectable is going to be good enough to generate real fantasy interest. And it's a maybe anyway. So, meh. Daniel Lynch, I think, has more potential. His swinging strike rate is 12.9, which absent context probably doesn't mean anything to you, but that's a really good swinging strike rate. He gives up a ton of fly balls, so he's been vulnerable to the home run, but you know, plays his home park's a big park. I could see how Daniel Lynch could overcome that. And he was pretty high in prospect himself. So not saying you need to rush out and add him, but I think there are definite skills there for Lynch that, you know, maybe this is the start of them coming to fruition.
All right. Before we hit the break, just a reminder to join our Fantasy Baseball Today Facebook group if you haven't already. That's facebook.com/groups/fantasybaseballtoday. Fun community, listeners, people who watch us on YouTube asking questions every single day. It's very lively and it's cool. You know, it's a lot of feedback and people interacting, and you could ask waiver questions, trades, dynasty, keeper, whatever you've got going on. You could hop in the Facebook group and post your question or comment, and you can interact with everybody else. And we are going to take a break, and we'll be back right after this.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The news and notes. The big injury from the weekend, actually. I mean, I guess two of them. But Mookie Betts was placed on the IL with a fractured right rib. Dave Roberts said he expects Betts to return in about 2 weeks, which sounds optimistic to me. But
yeah, well, it was weird because he was in... He was going to be in the lineup the next day because the x-rays were negative, and then he was scratched, and I don't know. I guess it's a very small fracture. The x-rays didn't pick it up at first. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the good news is if you lost Mookie Betts, there are some outfielders available. Michael Harris and Alex Kirilloff and Riley Green. So go out and get one of those guys. Manny Machado was diagnosed with a left ankle sprain after he exited in the first inning of Sunday's game against the Rockies, and x-rays came back negative, but it seems like he is going to miss some time. I don't know how much that will be, but it was scary enough for them to A, take x-rays, and B, call up CJ Abrams. So if you need a third base replacement, a couple of names I'm looking at, Scott: Brendan Donovan, John Birdie, Ezekiel Duran. I don't know why I just said it like that. That was weird. And Santiago Espinal. What do you think about those four?
I think it's not great. It's not a position where you want to lose a player.
Especially Manny Machado, geez.
Yeah. So I would say, seeing if I could find your list in the notes here. It's not in the notes, apparently. Could you go over the names one more time?
It is in the notes, Scott.
I couldn't find it.
Brendan Donovan, John Birdie, Ezekiel Duran, and Santiago Espinal.
Okay, so I think in a categories league, Ezekiel Duran is who I'd go for first. I think in a points league, because the walk to strikeout ratio is so good, Brendan Donovan is who I'd go for first. I think, though, if you're looking for, like, if steals is, you know, you need a ton of steals, John Birdie, you might look into him, because he stole three more bases on Saturday alone. That brings him to 16 stolen bases since May 27th. So he is running wild. And the Marlins have the most favorable hitter matchups next week, so he should be on base plenty then too.
Yeah, agree 100%. If you need speed, I mean, 16 steals over his last 20 games, as you mentioned. He has 18 total, which is tied for the league lead. This is John Birdie, 36% rostered. He's got four different position eligibilities on CBS. Second base, third base, shortstop, outfield. So if you play in any roto league where it's deeper format, five outfielders, a middle, a corner, definitely want to make sure John Birdie is rostered in that league. Liam Hendricks is set to begin a throwing program on Monday and is targeting July 1st for his return from the IL. Aaron Ashby has been cleared to make his next start on Tuesday against the Cardinals, and it looks like he's in line for two starts, one against the Cardinals, one against the Blue Jays. Scott, would you fire Aaron Ashby up for those matchups?
Yeah, I think so. I originally had, because remember, I took him out Thursday night when we recorded, but the news of this injury, originally had him in the must-start section of the two-start pitcher rankings. I have him a tier lower than that. So, you know, you have to exercise some caution. But so do the Brewers, and they're letting him make the start. So I think he'll probably be okay and make the two starts, and I'd still want to use him in most cases.
All right. Chris Sale will begin a rehab assignment in the Florida Complex League on Monday. Brandon Woodruff struck out 7 of the 8 batters he retired in a rehab start on Saturday. He's expected to make one more rehab start before rejoining the Brewers rotation. Tim Anderson is expected to return Monday against the Blue Jays, so get him back in your lineups. Wander Franco could rejoin the Rays next weekend against the Pirates. Chris Bryant is hopeful that he'll be able to return next weekend as well. Nick Lodolo struck out 6 across 2 innings in his rehab start on Saturday. He's expected to make at least one more rehab start, and he was a name, Scott, that I was looking to add in my deeper 15-team roto leagues just to kind of beat everyone else to the punch, not waiting until Lodolo actually rejoins the team, but, you know, pick him up and stash him for now.
Yeah, that makes sense. I didn't see him out there in any of mine, but that makes sense.
Colton Wong suffered a setback in his recovery and won't be activated for the Brewers' upcoming homestand. He's on the IL with a calf injury. Jesus Luzardo started a throwing program this weekend. He's on the IL with that forearm injury. Eloy Jimenez will have a chance to resume his rehab assignment at AAA on Tuesday. He had his recent rehab pause due to normal leg soreness, and he's been on the IL for a while now with that hamstring injury, so it's been a mess. As someone who advocates for drafting Eloy Jimenez every year, it hasn't been great. Nathan Eovaldi is progressing slower than expected and is unlikely to return from the IL when first eligible. He's out with lower back inflammation. Nate Pearson was removed from Sunday's rehab start at AAA due to right shoulder discomfort. Another one just cannot get healthy, cannot stay healthy, hasn't been a contributor in the majors yet. It's rough for Nate Pearson. Lorenzo Cain was designated for assignment by the Brewers on Saturday, and Justin Upton made his first start with the Mariners Friday and left the game after getting hit in the head with a pitch, which obviously is pretty scary, but he also started Saturday and Sunday, so I think Justin Upton is just fine. Other players who went to the IL this weekend: Tyler McGill with a strained right shoulder and will be shut down from throwing for 4 weeks before being reevaluated. And in leagues with no IL spots, Scott, I was thinking about dropping Tyler McGill this most recent fab period on Sunday.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, his ERA is over 5 now as well. You presume health has something to do with that. But yeah, it's been a while since Tyler McGill's done any good for anybody's fantasy team.
Anthony Rendon will miss the rest of the season as he needs wrist surgery, and it has been a real rough go the past couple of years for Anthony Rendon as well. So third baseman starting to drop. It's really the worst position to lose a player at, but not Not that Rendon has been great anyway. Austin Meadows went to the COVID IL after testing positive. Jesus Sanchez and Jesus Aguilar also went to the COVID IL. I did not see whether or not they tested positive. Frank Schwindel to the IL with a lower back strain, and Reds relievers Alexis Diaz with right biceps tendonitis and Tony Santian with a back injury. All right, let's get into some waiver wire hitters from the weekend outside of the prospects, of course. Christian Walker, I'm just so surprised, Scott, that he's still 70% rostered. I feel like, I know the batting average is bad, but the guy is up to 18 home runs. Another double dong on Sunday for Christian Walker. Luke Voit.
Wait, so you think 71 is too low for Walker or too high for Walker?
Too low. I think he needs to be rostered in more leagues. I think he just needs to be universally rostered, basically.
Okay. Maybe. It's a tough one because Christian Walker prior to this two homer game Sunday had gone 0 for 15 in his previous four. His batting average has actually fallen in June. So there's been no correction happening there like we hoped. Having said that, he's 14th among first basemen in total points. So he's relevant even in points leagues, which we tend to think is shallower or are shallower. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. 71 might be about right.
I mean, we've referenced the expected numbers all season long for Christian Walker. So I maybe it's just not going to happen for him, but his XBA is 277. His X slug is 616. Those are pretty awesome marks compared to where he actually is at. So,
You know, could he be Ross? I think let me think here. There are probably a couple of my own leagues that if he was out there, I wouldn't pick him up. So I think, you know, 71's not that low. I think it's about right.
All right. Would you rather have him or Luke Voit, who hit another home run on Sunday and he's having a strong June? 284 batting average, 6 homers, 947 OPS.
I mean, for next week specifically, Voit. In the shallower leagues where they wouldn't already be rostered, I think you can afford to go week by week with those two.
All right, fair enough. Who else do we have here? AJ Pollock is having a strong June. He's batting .323, 2 homers, 11 RBI, and .848 OPS. He's 39% rostered, and he is one of Scott's sleeper hitters for this upcoming week. Would you drop someone like Jesse Winker for AJ Pollock, Scott? Let's just say a shallower league.
Yeah, I mean, in a shallower league, a three outfielder league, I don't see why there's any reason to stick it out with Winker. You might as well. You know, I'm not ruling out him getting hot at some point and becoming relevant to that format again, but he's not the sort of player where if you drop him, somebody else is going to come scoop him up, you know? So I think playing the hot hand there, going with the better matchup for AJ Pollock, I think that makes sense.
In deeper leagues, five outfielder leagues, Robbie Grossman had a big weekend, back-to-back games with a home run on Saturday and Sunday, and maybe starting to heat up. He did go 20-20 last year, 20 homers, 20 steals. He's 19% rostered. Scott has the Tigers as the third best hitter matchups this week. And then Jack Sawinski, which I actually debated making my oh my goodness gracious player, 3 homers on Sunday, a triple dong. He's now up to 11 home runs, and his barrel rate is pretty impressive so far this season. So overall, he doesn't hit the ball consistently hard, but when he puts it in the air, it seems like Jack Sawinski actually hits it pretty well. So what do you think about these two, Scott, in five outfielder leagues, Robbie Grossman and Sawinski?
Probably a little more interested in Sawinski. This weekend, those were basically the first signs of life we've seen from Grossman all season.
Right.
I'm not especially interested in Sawinski. But his max exit velocity is high. When he gets a hold of one, he seems like he can do damage with it. It's just I don't think that's going to happen very consistently.
Fair enough. All right, so we're going Sawinski over Robbie Grossman. We've already talked about John Birdie, and just let's watch and see what happens. We've said this before, but Jarren Duran did lead off 4 games in a row prior to Sunday when he got the day off, but he's only 19% rostered. And I still think he's a very interesting player. So in deeper leagues, let's see what happens with Jarren Duran. The worryometer for these starting pitchers. We already talked about Mackenzie Gore earlier. Pablo Lopez, another subpar outing at the Mets on Friday where he gave up 7 runs. 6 of those were earned. He also had 18 swinging strikes on 84 pitches. So kind of a mixed bag here, but the last 6 starts, Scott, not great for Pablo Lopez. 5.23 ERA, 1.41 whip. He's home against the Rockies this week, so I think that's an okay matchup. But what do you think? Worryometer on Pablo Lopez?
It's still low. It's probably like 2. He's been missing a lot of bats still. Even with the rough stretches, ERA is only 2.85. My concerns for Lopez are mainly durability, but I don't think he's showing signs of being unhealthy. So I think he's fine.
All right. So you're fine starting him this week against the Rockies.
Yep.
All right. Lucas Giolito is really struggling right now. It was a tough matchup at the Astros on Friday where he gave up 8 runs over 5 innings pitched his last 4 starts. He's got an 8.71 ERA, 1.89 whip, 7 homers allowed during that span, and over 4 walks per 9. It is a small sample size, but this is something we talk about with like Hunter Green and Josiah Gray, where if you are allowing fly balls and allowing home runs and walking a lot of people, that is just a recipe for disaster. So, Scott, what do you think about Lucas Giolito, the worryometer on him?
I think it's a little higher than Lopez. I'll go 4 with Giolito. I mean, we really haven't seen him have a great start all year. His best, he had one where he gave up 1 earned run in 7 innings, but struck out only 5. He had one where he gave up 1 earned run in 6 innings, but walked 4. So, you know, out, not really like a signature, okay, this is the borderline ace I drafted kind of start from Lucas Giolito. But the stuff looks fine. The overall strikeout rate, overall swinging strike rate, they're still high. The xFIP 3.57, that's actually lower than last year. You know, even if the xFIP wasn't that good, I'd still probably view Lucas Giolito as a buy low at this point. I don't know that he's must start right now, but I think he will be soon enough.
He's going up against the Blue Jays this week, who are 6th in WOBA against right-handed pitching. Would you pass on that matchup?
Yeah, I'd lean toward benching Giolito this week.
Fair enough. And we spoke about Mackenzie Gore earlier. Let's get into some starter sit for some fringier starting pitchers. Shane Baz bounces back after a rough start. He was at the Orioles, 6 shutout innings with 7 strikeouts this weekend. The problem, he's going up against the Yankees this week, who are 1st in weighted on base average against right-handed pitching. What do you think about that matchup?
I could go either way with that. I'd be more likely to start Baz than Giolito.
All right, Eric Lauer, over his last 5 starts, we've talked a lot about this, 5.81 ERA, 1.59 whip, just 18 strikeouts to 14 walks over 26 and a third innings pitched, swinging strike rate way down, velocity way down. Starter sit against the Cardinals this weekend. They're very good against lefties.
I'd sit Lauer, and I'm pretty close to calling Lauer a drop, to be honest. I don't think it's not unthinkable to drop him in shallower leagues.
Yeah. The Zoom ball, it's not really working anymore, unfortunately. Josiah Gray has allowed just 2 earned runs over his last 4 starts. And this weekend, he went 6 shutout with 4 strikeouts against the Phillies. And he is now up to 80% rostered. And he's at the Rangers this week. I believe one of your sleepers too, right, Scott?
Yes. Josiah Gray?
Yes.
Yes, he is. Yes, he's actually allowed, oh, you already said it, combined 2 earned runs in his last 4 starts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it wasn't so much the case over in his weekend start, but slider usage way up, and he gets more missed bats with that, and it seems like it's helped him to keep the ball in the park more. So hopefully that continues for Josiah Gray, because I think if he can get over that home run issue, he has pretty good potential.
Blake Snell had another rough outing on Sunday. It was at Coors Field, 4 2/3, 5 runs allowed, 4 of those earned, 4 more walks, 5 strikeouts. He's up against the Phillies this week, who are 5th in WOBA against lefties. What do you think, Scott? Start or sit?
I would sit him, and I don't think it's unthinkable to drop Blake Snell either.
Would you go? Kate? Would you do it for like a John Gray, or would it have to be someone better than that?
That's right about the line. Right about the line, I think. Where do you have Blake Snell ranked?
That's a good question. Let's see. I have Snell SP56, and you have him 65th. So, yeah, I mean,
I have Josiah Gray 77th. I have John Gray 81st. I mean, that's not far off.
Yeah,
and you know, I could probably stand to move both the Grays up a little after this weekend.
Yeah, and so, probably move Snell down a little bit further too.
I think that's right about the line.
Yeah, I've been off Blake Snell. I mean, the past couple of years, I just don't really want anything to do with him. He's very inefficient. He walks too many. It's rough. Andrew Heaney made his return to the mound on Sunday against the Cleveland Guardians. He went 5 innings, 2 runs, 7 strikeouts. He is 79% rostered. Could be out there in some shallower leagues. The problem is he's at the Braves this week, Scott, and they crush lefties.
I do think Heaney's good, though. It was weird in this start. He, you know, the first two starts, he had broken out that sweeper, the slider that sweeps more, and had a lot of success with it. He was going basically 50-50 with the fastball. In this first start back, Heaney went 75 fastball, 25 slider. And the fastball was classified as a sinker by Statcast. So I don't know. I don't know if he actually was throwing a sinker all of a sudden as his primary fastball. It was harder than the fastball he was throwing earlier in the season. It was up in velocity. So that kind of leads me to believe it was a different pitch. And I don't know. I haven't heard anything about, you know, what went into that for Heaney, if the Dodgers have been working on that with him behind the scenes. But I trust the Dodgers, if it is something that they didn't implement with him, that it's probably for the better. But I was pretty excited about Heaney to begin with. Against the Braves, I wouldn't say he's an automatic sit.
Yeah, I don't know, man. The Braves are obviously hot and crushing lefties right now.
I mean, if they can't make contact off him, yeah. I'm less beholden to matchups than you are, I think, in general.
All right. So well,
I, you know, it depends on your options, but I wouldn't be afraid to start Andrew Heaney.
Michael Cole. I just threw my pen while I was talking and it scared me. Michael Kopech made his return to the mound on Sunday. He left his previous start with a knee injury. He gave up, he allowed 4 runs over 5 innings pitched at the Astros, and his velocity was down like 1.5 miles per hour. He does go up against the Orioles this week, so it's a good matchup, but I don't know. He's kind of iffy right now, Scotty.
I'd steer clear of Kopech. I'm not convinced he's right with the knee injury and everything, the velocity being down. Need to see signs of a turnaround.
All right, fair enough. Let's get to some leftovers, a few pitching standouts. Part one, Aaron Nola has now gone 7+ innings in 3 straight. He was at the Nationals this weekend. 8 shutout with 8 strikeouts there. The ERA is down to 3.11. Julio Urias looks to be back on track. Turned in another quality start against the Cleveland Guardians. 6 innings, 1 unearned run with 6 strikeouts. Over his last 6 starts, he's got a 2.10 ERA and a 13% swinging strike rate. So that sounds pretty good for Julio Urias. Carlos Rodon, back-to-back scoreless starts after a little rough patch. He was at the Pirates, 8 shutout innings with 8 strikeouts there. However, fastball velocity was down 1.4 miles per hour. Scott, what do you think about these three? Nola, Julio Urias, Carlos Rodon.
I got no complaints about any of them. Glad to see Rodon get back on track. Arias start to get back on track. Nola has been pitching like an ace again. His swinging strike rate has actually been pretty ordinary this year, but it's kind of been inconsistent from start to start. Some games he misses a lot of bats, some games he doesn't. I don't think it's anything to worry about.
Pitching standouts part two. Robbie Ray with his best start of the season on Friday against the Angels. 7 innings of 1-run ball with 10 strikeouts. He had 17 swinging strikes on 102 pitches. Jameson Taillon gets back on track after 2 subpar outings at the Blue Jays. 5 2/3 shutout with 8 strikeouts. And then Patrick Sandoval has put together 2 quality starts in a row. He was at the Mariners this weekend. 6 innings, 1 run, 5 strikeouts there. Anything on these three? Robbie Ray, Tyone, Sandoval.
Still don't really have faith in Tyone. And his previous 2 starts had been pretty bad. Robbie Ray, we've noticed recently he started throwing a sinker instead of the four-seamer. It's kind of like what may be happening with Andrew Heaney. And I normally I think of that as a step in the wrong direction. Sinkers generally aren't big bat missers. They're geared for contact. But Robbie Ray says he did it because it's helping. He did it to keep his walks down because, you know, A, could get contact earlier in the count with it, so it doesn't even get to a full count. I don't know if maybe he just controls it better than the four seamer too. He had 17 swinging strikes and 10 strikeouts in this one, so it didn't seem to hamper his strikeout ability throwing it as much as he did. So hopefully it is a step in the right direction for Robbie Ray, even if it is a little counterintuitive. And then for Sandoval, yeah, I mean, the changeups, he finally started throwing his changeup a little more in his last start, got a bunch of whiffs with it like he always does, and then back to only 20% in this start. So it seems like Sandoval is trying to pitch with one hand behind his back, which I guess he could do, actually. He's trying to pitch with his eyes closed or something. He's limiting his own potential by not throwing the changeup more.
Yeah, I don't really get that one either with Patrick Sandoval, but alas, the results have, they've been good. They've been okay. I mean, the whip is still high, 1.32 for Patrick Sandoval. Starting pitcher standouts part 3 from the weekend. Sandy Alcantara at the Mets, 8 innings. It's just crazy how consistently this guy goes deep into his starts. 8 innings of 2-run ball with 8 strikeouts. Ian Anderson got back on track at the Cubs, 6 2/3 shutout with 6 strikeouts. And then Nick Pivetta just continues this impressive run that he's on. He was up against the Cardinals, 7 innings of 1-run ball with 10 strikeouts. Over his last 9 starts, Nick Pivetta, 1.77 ERA, 61 strikeouts, 61 innings pitched. Not really sure how he's doing it, but he's doing it. Scott, what do you think? Sandy, Ian Anderson, Nick Pivetta.
So Ian Anderson, I still feel like he should be better than he's been. Maybe this is the start of it. Probably not. Sandy Alcantara, to put a number on it, you said amazing how deep he pitches into games. He's gone more than 7 innings. Not 7 or more. He's gone more than 7 innings in 6 of his last 7 starts. Oof. That is a throwback for sure. I don't know if it's going to come back to bite him down the line health-wise, but it's enjoyable right now. And then the other one. Yeah, Nick Pivetta. His last 9 starts, the 1.77 ERA. Less than a base runner an inning. Just looking great, but without missing the kind of bats we want to see him miss. So that makes me skeptical of it. He does have a heightened fly ball rate during the stretch, 47.1%, which is pretty high and higher than usual from him. So, you know, maybe he's leaning into that as a way of keeping hits down. Will it result in home runs more going forward? I would bet yes, but it hasn't. So far, it's been more of a help than a hurt to Pivetta, obviously.
All right. I know we talked about him recently and we called him a sell high candidate. I still feel that way about Nick Pivetta. You know, just make sure you're getting something of value. Don't just trade him for the sake of trading him, but I would look to sell high if you can. Hitting leftovers from the weekend, Josh Bell hit 3 homers across the doubleheader on Friday. Nice to see power get back on track for him. Hunter Renfroe hit a homer 3 days in a row. He's now up to 13. Anthony Rizzo has 3 homers in his last 4 games, now up to 18 home runs total. Big weekend for CJ Cron. He had 7 hits, 3 homers, including a double dong on Friday. Gleyber Torres had 7 hits this weekend, including his 13th home run on Sunday. Do you think Mike Trout likes facing the Seattle Mariners? He hit 5 home runs in a 4-game series against them, And I saw that he tied, I think it was Rafael Palmeiro, for the most home runs against the Mariners ever. And he's done it in like 150 less plate appearances than Rafael Palmeiro. So Mike Trout loves hitting against the Mariners. Adolis Garcia, 5 more hits this weekend, including another home run and another steal. He's now batting 253, 13 homers, 11 steals for him. George Springer, a sock and a shoe on Sunday. That's now 13 homers. Sneakily, George Springer has 5 steals this season. Not bad. He's on pace for double digits. Dansby Swanson, he already has double-digit steals because he stole 2 more on Sunday. He's batting 294, 9 homers, 11 steals. Swanson has been amazing. The call to the bullpen, some bullpen updates. The Phillies, what's going on with them? Sir Anthony Dominguez pitched in the 8th inning with a 2-run lead on Friday. He was facing the heart of the Nationals lineup. Brad Hand pitched the 9th inning for his 2nd save. And then on Saturday, Brad Hand entered with a 1-run lead, gave up a hit, a walk, and a run. Tie game. Sir Anthony Dominguez came in the 10th, picked up the save. How are you approaching this Phillies bullpen right now, Scott? I mean, I think it's still Dominguez is who we want, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. Brad Hand was the guy they went to this weekend, or at least tried to.
Yeah. Did that Saturday situation change things? Maybe. I want to ignore Hand if it was, you know, like a 15-team roto league, one of those leagues where everybody with a shot at saves is rostered. But I think in the long run, Sir Anthony Dominguez is the one you want here.
For the Giants, Camilo Doval, I know we had that weird stretch. He was pitching in the 6th inning one time, 7th inning. Well, he had 2 more saves this weekend on Friday and Saturday, and he looks like the guy, the closer for the Giants. For the Red Sox, on Friday, Tanner Houck entered in the 9th with a 4-run lead. 2 outs, runners on 1st and 3rd. He allowed 2 hits, 3 runs to score. He barely escaped, but he did get his 3rd save. And then on Sunday, he entered the 9th inning with 2 outs in a 6-4 game. He gave up a hit, but recorded the final out for his 4th save. 64% rostered is Tanner Houck. I assume, I don't know, maybe not. Do you want Tanner Houck over any of the Phillies guys right now, Scott?
That's a good question. I think so. Yeah. I mean, Sir Anthony Dominguez, if he had more assurance of saves, then he'd be the guy to pick up. But Houck just looks like the Red Sox closer at this point.
Yes, he does. For Tampa Bay on Saturday, Colin Poche picked up his 4th save. I think they're still going to mix and match, but he's been pretty good for them. So if you play in deeper leagues, he is a name there. And then on Saturday for the Mariners, Diego Castillo entered in a tie game in the 10th, and he gave up a 2-run homer to Mike Trout, of course. And Diego Castillo took the loss in that one. He had been really good recently for them, but yeah.
Not against Trout.
Trout
taking revenge on those Mariners for all of fish kind.
Yeah, makes sense. Fair enough, Scotty. To stream or not to stream for Monday, we'll start there. David Peterson up against the Marlins, Trevor Rogers at the Mets, Caleb Killian at the Pirates, JT Brubaker versus the Cubs, Alex Faedo at the Red Sox, and Zach Davies at the Padres. Sounds about right.
Brubaker against the Cubs might be okay. Davies has been kind of hot, but I don't really want any of them in a streaming situation.
Zach Davies could get the Padres without Manny Machado. In fact, I would say it's very likely that that happens. So
true.
Maybe he's okay, but
if Davies' changeup is not on, it doesn't matter who he's facing.
Yeah, no, that's
fair. But it's been on lately.
I probably should have mentioned this earlier, but if you're still listening at this point in the podcast, there is an early game on Monday, a 1 o'clock game between the Marlins and the Mets. So make sure to set your lineups. Tuesday, we've got Ryan Feltner at the Marlins, Roansy Contreras versus the Cubs, Eric Fetty at the Orioles, Rich Hill versus the Tigers, and Reed Detmers versus the Royals. I lied. We have one more. Marco Gonzalez at the A's.
Mm-hmm. Not great either. Okay. Roansy Contreras and Marco Gonzalez are okay. Yeah, those would be the best two. Between Monday and Tuesday, those are probably the best two.
That is the right answer. I agree with you. And we're going to wrap there. For Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye. Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.